You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Go Wild. Now, the Go Wild app has added some really cool and exciting functionality to their app. And the first one I want to talk about is the Near Me function. And basically what this does, it allows you to engage and connect with people in your area. You guys can talk about gear. You guys can talk about hunting areas. You guys can talk about what's going on in the woods. And it just allows the users to be more of a community and connect easier. The second part is the Gearbox. And what the Gearbox is, it is an opportunity for the users to not only see reviews on products and see what the Go Wild community is using in the field, what products they're using, but it also allows you guys to purchase up to 150,000 products. There's a shopping function on it. So check out the Go Wild app. If you haven't downloaded it to your phone yet, you need to, and you can do that at any app store that is currently available. Go Wild. It's an awesome app. Check them out. Welcome back to the Iowa Sportsman Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and today we have returning guest Steve Wiseman back on the show, and we're going to talk about fishing, and specifically fishing in the Okoboji Lakes and Spirit Lake. So that's where the content is kind of coming from, but the principles that we talk about, I'm sure, can be used in any body of water throughout the state of Iowa. So we talk about bluegills, walleyes, bass, perch, and a crappie and a variety of other species. But it's a really awesome episode because we also talk about what happens if the fish aren't biting. What do? You move to the next spot, you change it up. So I pick his brain. He's been fishing way longer than me. He's a way better fisherman than me. I like to bow hunt. He likes to fish. So I figure, why not get a guy with a lot of experience on to just talk about fishing in general? So awesome episode if you're into fishing. But before we get into today's episode, I want to talk about the Iowa Sportsman website. Be sure you guys are visiting iowasportsman.com for tons of articles coming out about, you know, the outdoors in Iowa, hunting, fishing, recreation, anything outdoors, they're putting it out. Also, be sure to subscribe to the Iowa Sportsman magazine. Tons of great articles in there as well. And lastly, don't forget to pick up the Hunting Atlas, the Iowa Hunting Atlas. Lots of great information in that atlas, maps to all the public ground in Iowa, as well as information about each county and each section. So it's very helpful, actually. I keep it in my truck, and I whip it out every once in a while and check it out, see where I'm at, see if there's anything that I missed or didn't know about, and it's all right at my fingertips because I keep it in my truck. So iowasportsman.com, subscribe to the magazine, and lastly, make sure you are subscribed to the Iowa Sportsman podcast, especially if you live in Iowa or maybe even a connecting state like Wisconsin, Illinois, Minnesota, North, South Dakota, you know, Nebraska, Missouri. The principles that we talk about in this podcast can be used anywhere in the Midwest. So keep that in mind. So subscribe to the Iowa Sportsman podcast. I've been talking too much already. Let's get into today's fishing episode with Steve Wiseman. In 3, 2, 1. All right, on the podcast today, it's been a while since we've talked, Mr. Steve Wiseman. Steve, how you doing, man?
Doing well. How are you doing today, Dan?
You know, I'm bracing for these next 3 days because the temperature is supposed to be hot. It's supposed to be Iowa humid. And, you know, I even went the extra step to cut some more sleeves off my shirt just so I'm a little bit more comfortable.
Well, just remember, Iowa is a state with the tall corn grows, and there's a reason for it. And that humidity you're talking about, that's doing her.
Yeah. So I live in, I guess, what you would call southern central, you know, like the east central side of the state, and it gets pretty humid around here. What about where you're at up by the Great Lakes?
Up by the Great Lakes, humidity is really, it gets really humid. And today it's about 88, I think, about a 5-10 mile an hour wind and total sun, and probably 65-70% humidity at least. So I was on the water this morning, and we're going to be talking fishing, so I'll be able to talk about that. But it was hot on the water. Thank goodness for the little breeze. And we got off by 11:30, because that's long enough for a 72-year-old man to be out in the sun.
Do you ever throw the trunks on and take a dip if it gets too hot?
No. If you have the shape body I do, you don't throw trunks on and go in water. I'm sorry. No.
Oh, yeah. All right, so I reached out to you because I wanted to talk about fishing and kind of get your experience with, you know, Okoboji and Spirit Lake up there, and talk a little bit about what's going on, you know, this time of year, this early July time frame. So I think my first question for you is, when you're out trying to fish and there's also people who are recreational boaters, how much of an impact does a recreational boater, let's say someone who's skiing or just out for a nice boat ride, impact the guy who's out there trying to fish?
Well, it really does. And I think especially on East Okoboji and West Okoboji, West Okoboji especially, this 4th of July weekend, and it seems like any time after 11 a.m., but when you hit the weekend, recreational boaters are out, the jet skis, everything. And that makes it really difficult to fish. Thank goodness they're not out before 10, 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
Usually they wait. And so you can get some good fishing in, but once you get, the Okoboji chop, and that's waves coming four different directions.
Yeah.
Because you've got boat waves from the left, the right, the front, the back, the corner. I mean, you get them coming from every which way. And if you're trying to troll an area, or even if you're trying to sit with an anchor, that's very difficult to do when you've got 3 and 4 foot swells moving you every which way.
Yeah.
So you just have to plan smart and get out there and get your fishing done, because the fishing's good. Those recreational vehicles don't affect the fish at all.
Yeah. So
because that's just their environment.
Yeah. So they're used to dealing with a lot of boat wake and turn dirty water because of the recreational boater.
Right, right.
Okay.
And but anyway, when you're talking West Okoboji this time of year, it's great for bluegills. The bluegills were on their beds until, say, the second week in June, and then they went off the shallow beds. Although I was out with my son and two other guys, and they wanted to keep bluegills, so I didn't keep any, but the three of them kept 65.
Oh.
And so they could have a big fish fry. And they ran mostly 8 to 9 inches. They were really nice size bluegills, but we were in 25 foot of water. We had some weeds, but those fish were still spawning.
Really?
In that deep of water. And that's something I've learned over the years, that those Okoboji fish, bluegills, don't have to necessarily spawn in 10 foot, 8 foot, 6 foot of water. They'll spawn out deep. And I knew they were, because the males were still squirting, and they were right on the bottom. You couldn't catch them off the big fish off the bottom. They were exactly on the bottom, and that tells me that they were protecting their beds.
Huh. So they were in 25 foot of water and basically scraping the bottom.
Yes.
What were you guys using to catch? What bait?
Well, I was using a jigging spoon. It's called a Shucks jigger minnow.
Yep.
And it was made by Charlie and Bev Shuck. And Charlie and Bev own Shuck's Bait Shop on the southwest corner of West Okoboji, around the highway by Highway 86. And Charlie died here a few years ago, but Bev is still making those jigger minnows, and they are so good. They are so good on Okoboji. They're good for Spirit Lake, for perch and walleyes. And Bev sells and markets them all over the Midwest. She's got a heck of a base of stores that want those jigger minnows.
Huh.
And they're kind of like the Swedish pilkie, if you remember the pilkie.
Okay.
And so it's a long rectangular bait that has a chain and a hook on the bottom. And you jiggle that thing, and that chain bounces and all kinds of colors. I like a gold and green color. I like a kind of a purple or a burgundy and silver color. There are she probably has 20, 25 different colors.
Okay.
And different sizes. But you put at this time of year, you put a little red worm or a trout worm, a Belgian worm, whatever you want to call it. They're like a garden worm, only they're a lot tougher and a lot more lively. And you buy them at the bait shops. And you drop that down and jiggle that, and that worm is moving, and boy, it can be just lights out. The other day when we kept 65, we probably caught 150.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we just fish two spots. You know, you go along with your locator, and you're watching the locator, and you watch the weeds, and all of a sudden you'll see that school of fish, and you just lock on it, and it's either going to be bluegills or it could be some yellow bass. There's a big yellow bass in West Okoboji, but most likely it's going to be bluegills.
Okay, so as far as this time of year, and specifically bluegills, is that their home this time of year, or do they kind of shift back and forth between deeper to middle to shallow water?
They've actually kind of moved out to the deeper weed lines, weed beds, and on west, that's in 20, 25, maybe even 30 foot of water. And sometimes they're over rocks with weeds. I have a student that I had 25 years ago in school that is a diver over here, and he's posted on Facebook some of his diving experiences. Oh my gosh, is that fun? He'll be down in 30 foot of water, 40 foot of water on west, and you see what's down there. You see the rocks, and you see just kind of the rubble that's down there, and you see the bluegills, you see the bass, you see walleyes, and those fish aren't scared of a diver.
Huh. That's interesting.
They just don't. Yeah, it really is. It really is. And so it's really fun because the water's so clear on west.
Okay.
And matter of fact, this is a side story, but Calvin Grosner is the son of John Grosner, who is a guide up here. And about 3 weeks ago, he had just gotten his diving licensure, or whatever you call it. And this guy wanted to dive, and Calvin went with him as a buddy thing, and the guy was down in the water in about 30 foot and had a seizure.
Huh.
And he lost that mouthpiece, and Calvin rescued him and swam with him 100 yards back to shore and did mouth to mouth to keep him alive until the EMTs made it. That's quite something for an 18-year-old kid.
Yeah, I think I heard that story on the news, to be honest with you.
Yeah. You might have. Yeah.
Huh.
So, yeah. So that was quite a deal. But anyway, so I watched my one of my former students. His dive shoots are just awesome. Cool. Just awesome to watch.
Cool.
But
in regards,
but anyway, water is really clear on West anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, even in the summer when it greens up on other shallower lakes, you're still going to be able to see 15, maybe even 20 feet down.
Yeah.
And so it's clear. And so, but those fish and those bluegills will actually move out, and they may suspend over 60 foot of water.
Okay.
In 30 foot. And I've caught them that way before, where you're just motoring along looking for fish, and you see this school of fish at 30 feet, and you drop it down, and bingo.
There they are.
But they're kind of moving around, so it's kind of tough to stay on them.
Yeah. So are they suspended typically by structure of any kind, or is it typically just like the flat bottom where you're going to find these fish?
I think they acclimate to structure too. Like I mentioned, the rocks and the weeds, the weed lines, the weed beds, they acclimate there because that's where their food is.
Yeah.
You know, but they do go off, say they're in 30 foot of water and they move out. Lots of times they'll just go out into 50, 60 foot of water in that same 30 foot where they were when they were along the weed structure.
Okay. Okay. So this time of year, other than the bluegills, are people finding success with other species like walleye or crappie or bass?
Yes. Matter of fact, we were bluegill fishing, like I said last week, and my son threw out a slip bobber and a leech. Because here a couple of years ago, he hooked into a 27-inch walleye while we were doing this.
Dang.
And so he always throws that out looking for that walleye. And he had caught some nice bluegills because the little bluegills will stay away from those bigger leeches. They won't be as aggressive. And anyway, the bobber goes under and he sets the hook and he said, no bluegill. Got it in. It was a 22.5-inch smallmouth bass.
Ooh, that's a big bass. Yeah, what did it weigh, like 3.5?
I think more than that. I think it was pushing 5. It was a beautiful fish. Beautiful fish. But smallies and largemouth bass, people on the Okavogies are, and even on Spirit, they're always fishing the weeds or they're fishing the docks.
Yeah.
You know, West Okavogie has all these wood docks. And those docks go out into 10, 12 foot of water. And so you've got bass that are sitting around that wood structure. And they're feeding on little fish and stuff like that. They're resting under the boat hoist. They're under the shade of the dock. And those persistent bass guys will catch lots of bass doing that. The walleye bite, I will say, on Big Spirit this year has probably been the best I have ever seen it.
Really?
Ever seen it. Yes.
Why do you think that is?
I think because the numbers, the year classes are set up so well right now. The food in Big Spirit, there's all kinds of spot-tailed shiners. You've got little baby perch, baby bluegills, crappies, and stuff like that. And there's a huge abundance of food. And these fish are fat. Matter of fact, we were out this morning, a friend of mine. I've got the best of both worlds. He's got a pontoon. My friend has a pontoon on Big Spirit. I have a pontoon on East Okavogie. So if the bluegills are biting, we take my pontoon and go bluegill fishing. If the walleyes are biting over on Spirit, we take his. And we went this morning, and we caught our 6 walleyes that were under 17 inches. We caught 8 slot fish that were between 17 and 22. We caught 3 or 4 that were probably 9, 10, 11 inches. We caught 10 perch. We caught a pumpkin seed. We caught a bluegill, and we caught a crappie.
What's a pumpkin seed?
It's a variety of sunfish.
Okay.
And it's really a beautifully colored. They don't get as big as a bluegill. They're usually smaller, but they're very aggressive and they kind of look like, I guess, a pumpkin seed. But anyway, we were fishing, get this, in 6 to 8 foot of water, right over the weeds. And those fish would come out. One time, I had one rod and a rod holder. The other one was by my leg at the back of the pontoon. And I saved the rod from going out. That fish hit so hard.
Yeah.
In that shallow water, they just, oh my gosh, they hit it hard.
Yeah.
But anyway, we were using spinners and a leecher and night crawler. Night crawler was working best. We're using a double hook because those perch peck and peck and peck. And so we'll use half a night crawler, and that way we can lots of times catch them on that second hook.
Okay. So,
but the walleye fishing on Spirit, just to kind of finish this out, has been incredible. And you've got, I know of Shane Aiken, who's a guide here. He's had 100 fish days.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And some guys are jigging over deep rocks.
Yeah.
Some guys are pulling lead core and crankbaits out in a basin in that 22, 23 foot of water, just going. Some guys are using bottom bouncers and fishing that deep with spinners and crawlers or leeches. And then we were doing stuff in the shallows over the weeds, and it's just a great walleye fishery right now. And of course, you have to throw back anything between 17 and 22.
Yeah.
But that has helped. At one time, it was a 14 inch minimum, and it seemed like all you could catch were 13 5/6, 13 7/8, 13 1/2. So we have the different depths that we can be fishing these walleyes on Big Spirit, and a lot depends too on if it's windy. You know, Big Spirit is a big dish, and if you have strong winds, that can affect. You can't just fish the whole lake. A 20 mile an hour wind is going to cause issues on one side of the lake for sure. But there are weeds and weed beds all across the lake, and to say you need to go try this weed bed, well, you got to try the weed beds because I talked to a friend of mine that's on another set of weeds on the west side of the lake, and he's been catching them there. And so you just got to find your area to try it. And if there are really good bait shops up here that are able to give good help on where you can find these fish. But one thing about the walleyes on Big Spirit, they are very healthy right now. As I mentioned, we've got good bait fish and everything. There are satellite lakes too, like over at Lake Park, Silver Lake. That has been a really good walleye lake. Tuttle Lake, which is on the Minnesota-Iowa border up by Dolliver. That thing's 4 to 5 feet deep. It's been producing walleye since April. And I'm not sure about this week, but even as of last week, guys were crankbaiting and just pulling. There's no depth change. It's just a basin, and you just go. And they've been catching beautiful fish. A lot of 17, 18, 19-inch keepers. And then every once in a while, a big 24, 25 incher. So there are great walleye places to go in addition to Big Spirit. But Big Spirit has kind of been the go-to place over the last several years. And this year has really been outstanding.
Yeah. So is there a higher percentage place to catch walleye out there than another? Like, if you only could go one place and do one thing for 1 hour on the lake, where are you going and what are you doing? And the reason I'm asking this is just for, you know, for someone who doesn't have the information that you have for their best chances to catch a walleye.
Yep. boy, for this time of year, the way things are going right now, if you don't know spots, to me, fishing the basin of the lake with lead core and crankbaits, and you just go. You're not necessarily working structure then. You're just working the basin. And so you've got marauding fish out there.
Yeah.
And you're gonna catch perch, too. These perch are being really aggressive. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But that's what I would do because you're covering so much ground.
Yeah.
And when you run these crankbaits, you don't have to have them ticking off the bottom. You know, the walleyes will feed up, you know, and since it's probably moving at 2.5 miles an hour, maybe even faster, it's going to be a reactionary bite. It's got to be the color. It's got to be the wobble. It's got to be all of that, and that will – they'll react strike. Even on a day when they may not be hungry, it's going to be a reactionary strike to something that they, that flash or that movement. So I would do that. If you're a jig fisherman, I would take like off of Stony Point. That is a very rocky point on the east side of the lake, kind of the northeast side. And it's got lots of rocks, and it's got weeds, and it's got humps, and all those things. I would work that area. Right now, I'm just into this weed bite. I mean, that's so good right now that I'll do that. But each weed bed's a little different, and you got to know the weed beds you're going to be on and stuff like that, too. But... so that, I don't know, did I do one spot, Dan?
I mean, you answered the question, right? I mean, let's be honest. If someone's not having luck in one spot, they're going to go move, and they're going to move. You know, it doesn't take an expert fisherman to figure that out. So my next question, and I want you to answer this question in a general term. And what I mean by that is let's try to leave the species out of it for a moment. And if you want to use an example of a species, you can. But what happens when you're out there and all the conditions seem good, but the fish just aren't biting, right? What is your strategy at that point to try to change things up to get them to bite?
Well, I'll if I've tried different spots doing what I've been doing, and it's not working, then I've got to change tactics. And I love to do slip bobber over rocks by the weeds. I love to pull over weeds with spinners. I would go to something different, and I would go to the lead core or that type of thing. If there's anything that seems to be this time of year through summer now, it's going to be pulling those cranks over that deep. That's going to work very well. Or if I'm on spirit and the walleyes just aren't going, I may go fish perch.
Okay.
Because there's other options. You've got perch. You've got a good crappie population. Largemouth, smallmouth, bass. So you have other options. Northern pike, if you want to focus northern pike, and there is a variation in big spirit. It's a silver pike, and it's a silver color. And the first time I saw one, I thought, "God, I think that's a muskie," but it's not. It's a silver northern pike. But anyway, there are so many different options out there, and right now, when we were trolling with spinners, those perch are just hammering on those spinners with a night crawler. And like I say, we caught 10 and probably had another 30 or 40 bites. But if you stop in those shallows to fish perch, it's the flash and the movement that makes those perch attack that spinner. And so just sitting there waiting for them, they aren't going to bite like they do when they attack the spinner. But there has been a good perch bite. It should only get better out in the deeper water. Again, there's a basin bite. There's something about that basin. Lots of times they're feeding on red worms on the bottom. You bring them up, and lots of times they've got their snout is raw from eating off the bottom. And they're in big schools, and they meander and they wander. And if you don't know where to go, look for some boats. That's probably the simplest way. You know, if you see one or two boats in an area, that doesn't necessarily mean something. You see five or six, that means there has been perch, or they think there will be perch, or at one time there were perch. I mean, I call them the perch armada. When you have a whole bunch of boats that are fishing in an area, and they're waiting for the school to come through. And it's kind of funny. You can watch a school come through by watching people set the hook from boat to boat to boat to boat. Sometimes it's only a boat, and you try to figure out how can that one boat out in the middle, everybody is around them and nobody else is getting any. There's something causing that school to be in that tight area.
Yeah.
Now for the perch out there, I'll use that jigger minnow I was talking about earlier, or yellow and white mini jig. Shucks has some that a mini jig that they call a K-bait. It's one that they make themselves. A slip bobber and a plain hook with a tiny minnow. Using whackworms, silver wigglers, mealworms. All of those are good perch baits.
Okay.
And go ahead.
When it comes to finding fish, right? Let's say a guy, I mean, it sounds to me like you have a locator, right? Are there any, any trigger points or, identifiers or markers that a person can use his eyes for, like watching a current or watching waves break or watching where land goes into the lake? Is there any identifiers there that may help someone find fish that may not have a fish locator?
Well, I think wherever there is water running into the lake, wherever there is current, fish like that current. There's no doubt about that. And there are little tributaries that run into these lakes. Big Spirit right now is probably 6 inches over full, and the water is running over the spillway into East Okoboji. And so there is a current at each of these bridge areas on the Okoboji's. There are always fish around those bridges because there's always current.
Yeah.
A little tougher to fish because people are coming in and out of those bridges under the bridges with their boats. So that makes it a little tricky, you know, unless you're fishing in the evening or early morning. To me, that's the number one thing is water. Number two is just looking at the structure on that lake. If you see a point come out and there's rocks along that point and you can see in the shallows and then that point goes down, you know it's going to be rocky for a while and gravelly. If you see some weeds along with that, most likely there will be fish because weeds will invite little small fish for protection, which brings the big fish. Which brings the bigger fish, you know? And so, you know, I would look for something like that. Truthfully, Dan, I would invest in a locator.
Okay.
I seriously would, because what I do with mine, my depth finder is just loaded with icons. Every time I find a good place to bluegill fish on West and I'm catching them, I create an icon so I can go back to that spot. Now, they might move 30 yards, 40 yards, 20 yards. I've got one dock that out in front of that dock, about 40 yards, so it's in about 9, 10 foot of water. That dock I have fished since 1980, and bluegills always spawn there.
Yeah.
So what the locator does is not only find fish, but when you catch a fish, and that's a good fish, you can mark it. And with these new locators, you know, if you're trolling and you catch a walleye and you put a mark and you keep going, and then you have another one 40 yards later and you mark it, and you go another 50 yards and you catch another one, you now have a milk run where you can go back and follow that crumb trail right back through those marks. And pretty soon you can see all your marks as you go back and forth and back and forth. And you actually, you can't get more efficient than that when you're trying to keep on fish.
Okay.
Okay. So I really think, you know, if people can purchase and can afford a locator, of course, a lot of it has to do, can you afford the boat? And can, you know, I mean, nothing's cheap when it comes to fishing.
Right. That's a fact.
Yeah,
that's,
you know,
a fact.
I'm sorry, but that's the way it is. Now,
yeah.
You know, and there are times now, this is also a good time of the year to float our rivers. Now, you can take just a little boat, just a little John boat, little boat. You may have to portage now because the rivers are getting kind of low. But all it takes is a rod and a reel and a glob of nightcrawler or something like that. And you find your areas where it's washed out, or you find a nice sandbar and you set up on the sandbar and you throw it into a wood bog or something like that, and it's Catfish City.
Okay.
And that's not expensive. The only one thing, a friend of mine taught me, you know, they like night crawlers, but they love fresh shrimp. So take some good raw shrimp with you, get some at the store, and cut them up into chunks. And they love, catfish love raw shrimp. But this friend of mine had portaged to a little spot where he wanted to fish, and he had put some shrimp in his pocket. And when he got home, he forgot to take the shrimp out. and then his wife put the pants in the washing machine. This was not a real good deal at all.
Did he have to sleep on the couch for a couple nights?
I think he slept on the river for a while.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny.
But we have these inland rivers, and when you get on the river and you know, you start at one spot and you end up however many miles down, you got to have another vehicle at the end so you can get back up. You know, you got to be able to get your other vehicle from where you left off. But you get inside the banks of that river, it's a whole nother world. It is just amazing. You know, and these little kayaks are just great for that. Canoes are great for that. Little John boats great for it. And it's nothing fancy, but you're going to catch lots of fish. You're going to catch fish. You might catch some walleyes if things are right. You get the right little low head dam or something like that. You'll catch walleyes. You might catch a pike. Carp. You can do battle with carp all day. And you're inside. You don't know where you're at. You think the next turn is where I'm going to. The next turn. Why? I'm getting close to where I'm going to be done. It's around the next turn. Well, the river turns and turns and turns and turns. and 6 miles can take several hours.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
and that's a cool way to fish. It really is.
Yeah. Man, I love catfishing. Whenever I get the opportunity, it's very rare these days, just because of my lifestyle, I guess, with kids and work and all that stuff. Because I put a majority of my time into bow hunting, so I wanna spend time doing that. I feel like there might be some marital problems if I decide I want to become a fisherman too.
Yeah, right. I understand that.
Yeah. So I want to ask you a question about, and I'm sure you've heard them. I mean, how many years would you say that you've been fishing? You're 72 now. How many years have you been a fisherman?
Oh, probably 67,
okay.
I would guess.
67 years as a fisherman. In that time frame, have you heard of any wives' tales? Like, if this is happening, then you better get on the water because this fish is biting. And I'll give you an example. One of the wives' tales that I've heard was, when the lilacs are blooming, you need to get on the water and fish for crappie because the crappie will bite when the lilacs are blooming.
Well, that's one. And also when the cotton is flying on the cottonwood trees.
Okay. For crappie.
That's when the crappie. For crappie and for bluegill.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Any other tales for walleye or catfish?
You know, if the wind's in the west, the fish bite the best.
Okay. Okay.
You know.
Is that true?
If the wind's in, you go when you can.
Yeah. Right. Right.
a wind can be a big advantage. On some lakes that have a lot of sediment, if you get a good wind, say out of the south, and there may be a point part way down, and that wind continues to blow that sediment into that point, pretty soon you get a mud line. And that mud line is also causing bait fish and food to be there, and your bigger fish will be there too. And that mud line, see it on the Missouri River a lot in South Dakota, but that mud line will hold fish, and if it could even be 5 or 6 feet. I've seen it on Big Spirit a few times, not a lot, but a mud line, that's where wind can really be to your advantage. Wind can also be to your advantage if you can drift. And if you can drift, and you say you're drifting spinners, and you can drift about a mile to 1.1 mile an hour, and you're drifting, and you just let that rod in the rod holder, and as that boat rocks with the waves, that causes a unique movement to that bait down below. And I've caught more fish doing that than holding that rod in my hand while I'm drifting.
Okay.
And I think it's that extra movement from the boat.
Okay. Okay. So this time of year, you mentioned, you know, you're kind of all over the place. It sounds like you've fished for walleye already in the past couple of days. You fished for bluegill in the past couple of days. Is there a fish out there that you absolutely love over everything else? Do you have a favorite, or are you just a fisherman who loves to fish?
Yes. How's that for an
I
answer?
Knew that was coming. I don't know why I even asked the question.
I love to catch all kinds of fish. But if there's one, I think it's a bluegill, because ounce for ounce, nothing fights as hard as a bluegill. And they will readily bite, but they'll also humble you, because at times they won't bite. And you can catch them more year-round, I think. In clear water, it's awesome to be able to see them and catch them. So I guess they're my favorite, but Right now, walleye, perch, yellow bass. We have yellow bass in the lakes up here, and they're in a lot of lakes in Iowa. Not necessarily native, but we have them. And we have some monsters up here that are in that 13-inch range, and that's a heck of a fight. When you have a yellow bass hit, it's rod jarring, and so they're a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So I guess to me it's, and if you're going to fish all the different species, you kind of have to have, and I'm not patting myself on the back, but you have to know what you're doing, kind of.
Yeah.
You know, or go out with a guide to help show you, and then you can replicate that. I had a friend of mine that's a guide, and he had some friends that wanted to fish walleyes at night on West Okoboji that month of May.
Okay.
And so they asked him questions. And so he told them how fast to go, what colors to use, what size to use, and how deep to go. They came back, and he said, "How'd you do? We didn't catch anything. Why?" Well, number one, they weren't at the right depth. Instead of being at 8 to 10 foot, they were at 10 to 12 foot. The fish weren't there. They went, say, 1.8 miles an hour. He had told them, go 2.2. So those little things like that, you either learn on your own, by guess and by gosh, or with a friend who has done it before, or with a guide, so that you have a base to start with, so that you can then go. You know, when we fish bluegills on beds on West Okoboji, a lot of people like to use a little tiny bobber. I take the bobber off, and I'll sight fish those fish, and I'll cast to those bluegills, and I'll pick out who and what I want to bite and work it. And if you use a bobber at that point in the season, you might get one bite for every 10.
Okay.
And I had a friend of mine that used a little 1/64th ounce regular lead head jig. I used the tungsten, and I could get down and into the beds, and he was still floating. And it was 10 to 1. The next day, well, I gave him some tungsten so he could start catching them, but there's a difference. Same size bait, with the same bait on, but it didn't fall the right speed to be able to get to those fish.
Huh, that's interesting.
You know, and the same can hold true for largemouth bass, smallmouth bass, northern pike, walleye. I mean, there are many ways to catch the fish that you want to target. It's what you feel confident with, and it's what is working.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. I'll tell you this. My favorite fish to catch, I don't know why. Maybe it's because my past experience with them has been so fun, and it's smallmouth bass on the Mississippi River. And
oh god,
man, I'll tell you, just throwing a top water early in the mornings right on some of these mud banks or some of these rock banks where they're going in hunting for shiners.
Yep.
It's some of the funnest, best fighting fish that I've ever had. I call them the bicep of the river. And so I myself love catching smallmouth. Now, we're getting ready to wrap up here, but you told me before we started recording, you had a story that you wanted to tell me about cane pole fishing.
Yes. Well, I've known Jason Mitchell for a lot of years, and he's a great fisherman, has a great show up there. Out of Devil's Lake, and he goes all over the Midwest, and he's on the Fox Sports Network and stuff. And then there's Kevin Paul, who is a guide out of Clear Lake. And Clear Lake has a nice set of reeds, pencil reeds and stuff like that, and a pretty good base of crappies right now. But you can't get into these weeds very well. And if you do, you're going to break down and kind of destroy that reed bed. So he had Jason come down, and they did a show. If you want to watch it, just Google cane pole crappies, and you'll get Jason Mitchell and Kevin Paul. They used 20-foot fiberglass cane poles, and they dipped.
Yeah,
is what they did. They moved up, and they got at the edge of that mat of reeds, and then they reached out and they dipped into little spots that were the size of maybe a foot around or 6 inches or whatever. And they were using minnows because that's kind of what they were going on, just a little jig and a minnow. And they'd dip it down, and they'd hold it there and jiggle the end of that cane pole. And then the end of the cane pole would load up just a little bit. And Kevin would say, "You got to wait until they get it in that big old paper mouth," and then set the hook. Now, when they set the hook, everything was done above water. They would pop that crappie out. The crappie would come walking or flopping across the top of the reeds and into the boat, because you could not pull them through. You'd never make it. And they didn't use a bobber because a bobber would get caught up on those reeds too. So it was straight cane pole, a little jig, a minnow, and dipping.
Yeah, yeah. I'll be honest. I've seen more people with cane poles just driving around taking my kids to state parks recently than I have in the past. So it seems like it's growing in popularity a little bit.
I think it is. I think it's kind of a renewal.
Yeah.
Cane pole, you know, that's something from 100 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, the old bamboo cane poles, you know.
Yep, yep.
But again, it's an art.
Yeah, it is.
I've watched those guys, and it's 20 foot is long.
Yeah.
And that takes muscle to do that.
Yeah.
To reach that way out there and jiggle it and then pop that fish out and bring it back in. I mean, you can't just say, "I'm going to go throw a cane pole out." That doesn't do it.
Yeah.
And they only had like 3 to 4 foot of line on the end of that cane pole because they weren't going to play them. They were going to horse them out of there.
Yeah. Huh.
And so it was real, and they were catching 12 to 14 inch crappies.
I wonder if that's something that would crappies. I wonder if that's something that would teach kids how to fish better. You know, not teaching them how to cast right away, just throw, you know, reaching a small cane pole out there, dipping a little worm or a lure and letting those bank fish.
I think so.
Yeah.
Huh. I think so. And if you can get on a dock, you know, and a lot of these lakes and stuff have docks now, fishing docks, where people can go and you can do exactly what you're talking about. And these docks, again, provide habitat, provide shade, and so you are going to attract fish to those areas. And and even, like you say, bank fishing. My father-in-law's older brother had a mentally handicapped son, and Tom was a fishing fanatic. He would sit by the hour, and we would go out to the Missouri River, and they would take a long cane pole and a big bobber and put a chub on it and help Tom get it out there. And Tom would sit there by the hour. And I tell you, that kid caught more 5 to 10 pound northern pike. Oh my gosh. You didn't know how does that rod
do that
break.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Man, that's awesome. That's awesome.
But Tom taught me a very valuable lesson about fishing, and that's patience.
Yeah. That's a fact.
You know, too often we don't catch something in 5 minutes. We got to move. We got to do this. We got to do that. Well, let's kind of analyze the situation and you know, if the fish are here, let's see if we can get them to go rather than just hopping and hopping and hopping.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the truth, man. That's the truth. I fall under that category, believe it or not, of they're not here. Let's go. Or they're not biting. Let's go. You know, and not yeah. switch it up a bit on them. But, well, I tell you what, Steve, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to hop on and chat with us again. Hopefully you get out and your hot streak continues with getting fish in the boat.
Well, I sure hope so. We'll keep trying. When you're 72, every day on the water is better than any day was of work ever.
That is a fact. That's the truth. Thank you for your time, man.
You bet. Thanks, Dan.
And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Huge shout out to Steve for taking time out of his day. I mean, he's retired, so the only thing he's doing is fishing anyway. But thank you very much for taking time out of his day to hop on and chat with us. Thanks to all of you for listening. And be sure to check out iowasportsman.com, the Iowa Sportsman Magazine, and subscribe to the Iowa Sportsman Podcast. Hopefully everybody has a very safe 4th of July. And don't overdo it. Stay safe, and we'll talk to you next week.